bil-qala u l-moqdif. Żjajjar storiċi ta' personalitajiet imgħoddija li gżejjer Maltin. Ċar xwira pora mikrofnu semmilkom u nilqakom għal-edizzjoni oħra din hija 15 il-ġimgħa fis-sensi ilha bil-qala u l-moqdif. Il-ġimgħa li għaddiet kellna okkażjoni nitkellmu ma' Dr. Giovanni Bonello dwar Laura Battiferra u kont wetkom li ħaniltaqgħu ma' personaġġ ieħor mis-seklu 16 ma' l-istess Dr. Bonello. Ma daħlet okkażjoni li mhux ta' min jitlifha meta l-ambasċatriċi tal-Eġittu Dr. Magda Baraka li tinsab Malta tatna l-opportunità li niltaqgħu magħha u nitkellmu dwar avvenimenti verament interessanti li qed jiġru bħalissa l-Eġittu li issa ilhom għaddejjin għall-inqas mill-bidu tax-xahar tal-Ulju u li ovvjament lkoll nafu ilhom ukoll għaddejjin minn Jannar tal-2011. Naħseb din hija okkażjoni li kulħadd jifhem għandna indaħluha mill-ewwel u r-raġuni hija marbuta ħafna mal-aħbarijiet minħabba li f'dawn il-postijiet f'dawn il-pajjiżi l-avvenimenti jistgħu jiġru malajr. Speċjalment meta nafu li l-gvern li hemm illum l-Eġittu qiegħed jaqdi l-funzjonijiet tiegħu sakemm il-pajjiż jissejjaħ għall-elezzjonijiet ġodda wara li kien hemm taqliba kbira kontinwazzjoni tar-revoluzzjoni ta' Jannar tal-2011 meta l-Eġizzjani reġgħu marru fit-toroq u nħew il-President li kien ġie mtella b'elezzjoni għaliex derilhom li dak il-gvern ma kienx qiegħed jaqdi l-funzjonijiet li għalih ġi imtella. Rakkont ftit komplikat u forsi mhuwiex sempliċi daqskemm qed nispjega hawnhekk jiena. Minħabba l-fatt li kienet propju l-armata il-mezz li biġi imneħħi il-President Morsi u illum hemm gvern temporanju sakemm jersqu lejl elezzjonijiet. Kien hawn diversi opinjonijiet fid-dinja tal-aħbarijiet, mid-dinja politika, saħansitra. Kien hemm min ma qabilx ma' dan li huwa sejjaħ kolb ta' stat u għalhekk il-kobba tidher imħabbla ġmiela. Għal dawk li bħali jieħdu interess kbir biex isegwu dak li għaddej f'pajjiż daqshekk qrib tagħna fil-Mediterran, pajjiż li għandu daqshekk rabtiet magħna, saħansitra, bil-qala u l-moqdif, ġew żgur l-ewwel nies f'dawn il-gżejjer li rabtuna ma' dik lajn ta' Osiris li naraw fuq il-bċejjeċ tal-baħar tas-sajjieda. Imma hemm rabtiet oħra, probabbli s-sena u l-kultura tal-bini li aħna naraw ħaġar qim li mnajdra għandha rabta wkoll jew influenza fuq il-piramidi li ġew mibnija warajhom. Żgur li bħala potenza semitika aħna nistgħu ngħidu li nagħmlu parti wkoll minn dik id-dinja qadima li minnha wara kollox ħarġu l-alfabeti u l-lingwi ta' bosta mid-dinja li nafu aħna, inkluż il-lingwi tal-Mediterran. U għalhekk il-borma żgur fiha ingredienti li lilna jinteressawna. Illum għandna ċans li nagħtu l-mikrofonu lil Dr. Magda Baraka li kif għadtilkom hija l-ambasċatriċi għall-Eġittu għaw Malta. Il-ġudizzju ta' kull wieħed minnkom jista' isir wara li jintemmu l-programm tagħna bil-qala u l-moqdif. Palma semmejt fil-bidu tal-programm, issa għandi pjaċir nitaqgħu ma' l-eċċellenza tagħha l-ambasċatriċi Dr. Magda Baraka li tirrappreżenta s'intendi l-Eġittu f'Malta. U meta ngħidu l-Eġittu wieħed jifhem li bħalissa huwa wieħed mill-pajjiżi l-iktar popolari fl-aħbarijiet. Welcome to our studios, Dr. Baraka.
Thanks for hosting me.
It is a pleasure to host you and to explain immediately why your invitation is a special one for us, not only because you represent your country as ambassador in Malta, at a time also when Egypt is in the news almost every day, maybe not always for the best things we wish for everybody, but that is history, that is life in a country. There is always a long way to go.
It will be for the better, I trust. It will be for the better.
There you are. So you are very positive. But also because you possess a PhD, a doctorate in history as well, which interests our series very much. But we will come to that in a couple of minutes. I was going to start the connection. This series is called Bil-Qala u l-Moqdif, which means by sail, by rowing.
I understand it in Arabic. It has an Arabic origin, both words, al-ala and al-mu'daf.
So how would you translate in Arabic, bil-ala wal-mu'daf, the same words? You would pronounce it in the same way?
Bil-ala wal-mu'daf, exactly. We will say al-mu'daf, not al-mu'daf, dif, but it's just the slant of the vowel.
The syllable is pronounced slightly different.
Yes.
But exactly. There you are. You have been in Malta for how many months now?
4.5 months.
4.5 months. You learned Maltese already?
I wish I will.
But it's very easy for you.
I understand 50%, let us say. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but about, you know.
But you will understand the sense of most words also because you happen to know French.
Yes.
And Italian, I think.
I manage Italian because of my French, but I'm not Italian speaking. I might use the time here to learn Italian and Maltese.
We wish you well there.
Thank you.
Would you say that this love and command of languages came from your diplomatic posting in Europe?
I loved languages very much. You know, there's the personal side and there is the Egyptian side. Most Egyptians, I have found, speak better English than I thought. We joke in Egypt about our pronunciation of English, which is far from the English pronunciation. But traveling around the world, I have discovered that even simply educated people speak better English than many, many countries around the world. I will not name them, but that claim to be touristic countries. So there is that. And we learned French at school. I was posted in France, as a matter of fact, and I did take courses in the Sorbonne, where I had thought myself a beginner. I jumped from one placement test to the other, and I found that I was at the first stage of the advanced level with my
faux débutante.
I was a faux débutante, exactly. And I was surprised at how good our school education had been with French. And then I took it further from there, but it was my effort again. I was posted to Paris, and Paris, as you know, is the perhaps, I don't want to say the, but with opera, and I discovered even theater. I thought theater was British,
it's the international capital.
Yes, but the Comédie Française and even Rue de la Gaîté. And I didn't want to spend 4 years in Paris without going to the theater, without going to French movies, without following the political programs and television in their own language. So I started with a dictionary in my hand in front of television. I want to refer actually to what you said to me once. Maybe learning Italian through watching television is one way. So maybe I will buy an Italian-English dictionary and sit in front of television.
And go for Italian this
and
time.
And go for Italian.
If it's not a state secret, you mentioned Paris, you have been posted. Have you been posted to other cities? You're still young, but how many cities did you experience in your career?
In my career, I've been posted to Paris and to Brussels. These were my two postings before here. With my career in the ministry, it could have been 4 postings, but I have opted to stay more in the capital. So I have done 2 posts with shorter assignments in Rome and in England.
You have been quite around.
Yes, already. I have been quite around because also by coincidence, I'm a diplomat's daughter, so I've been traveling since I was 6 months old.
So your father was also an ambassador.
Yes.
So it's in the family. But you managed to maintain a family yourself. You are married and you have kids.
Yes.
And your family is with you in Malta now?
Yes, they have joined a month ago.
How does all the family feel about Malta? Are you at home?
I'm very encouraged by every single person of my family's reaction. They endorse my love to Malta because they're all very pleased to be here. They feel at home. They feel the people are a mixture of simplicity and sophistication and kindness. And they've all remarked, you know, they have come at different points in time. So everyone has discovered that for himself. First, my mother had come. She's back in Cairo. She comes and goes. She was very happy to be here. And then my husband came and later my 2 children came. And everyone had made the remark on their own.
I see. And now they will be following their education in Malta. So that will be settling here for a while at
least. Exactly.
I know that you have a doctorate in history. Perhaps you could tell us something about that in this program, which has a historical background. It's more of interest to our listeners to hear why you were attracted to history and where did you study?
I came to history from area studies. I graduated first from the American University in Cairo, where I studied Islamic studies. And there is a strong component of history. not just history, but a very strong component of history. And then I made a master's at the American University in Middle Eastern studies. It's an area studies thing, meaning that you converge on the Middle East from the viewpoint of different disciplines, sociology, political science, anthropology, economics, history.
It's interdisciplinary.
It's interdisciplinary. When you go for a PhD, you've got to choose a discipline. I went to Oxford for my PhD, and from there, history was the interdisciplinary discipline, if you may. In the modern historiographic tradition, there is this convergence between sociology, history, anthropology, and so on. Even in Oxford, there was this influence by the French tradition in historiography. What the French at that time, when I was doing my PhD, was called l'histoire totale, and which had influenced also the English tradition in the sense of getting into areas like speaking to the people who lived, having books, for example, in England about the Edwardians.
The anthropological aspect.
Yeah. And histoire de mentalité, you know, to see the mentality of the people at a certain period, which was very interesting for me because it reversed history. I wouldn't say it stood history on its head, it stood it back on its feet. It was on its head and it stood it back on its feet.
It's revisionist history as well.
It's revisionist history, exactly. You know, what happens in history is supposed to be the same story. So you look at a different angle, and the angle historically was the rulers and the governments and the wars.
The big guys.
And now that people were the heroes and societies were becoming important with democracy, you went back to the people to see how they felt and thought, how peasants felt and thought about a certain thing, for example, in France or in Egypt or in Malta. And that was very interesting. And now, as you are looking into that yourself, collective memory. Collective memory is where society looks upon matters.
It's another trend into this phenomenon you are mentioning,
exactly,
of revisionist history.
So when I did that, I felt that I was being also honest to all the disciplines I had with the background of my master's and my BA before.
Did you find it of a great help to having done that particular focus in your study, and now you are in a position when you are representing people, and in the case of Egypt, you are also understanding your own people?
To be honest, I found it enjoyable. I did it with a sense of enjoyment and play. It wasn't hard work. You know, I believe in work through play.
You loved what you did.
I loved it tremendously. I do have this feeling until now of diplomacy being a representation of everyone, from the poorest person, from the lowest level to the highest. Again, like in history, not the history of the rulers only, but the history of society. So in that sense, I don't know if that is because of my background, because I suspect a lot of my fellow diplomats will have the same feeling. Maybe because we are a career institution. The Egyptian diplomatic service is not political. We cannot be partisan.
Which is practically almost everywhere, but you can't help to belong to the government that is
in
place.
Yes, you represent the government in the sense that the government is representing the people.
A democratic procedure.
But you would find in most Egyptian diplomats, and in myself, again, corroborated by my studies, that I feel that I represent the Egyptian nation.
Being Mediterranean forms part of this openness in your diplomatic service as well?
Being Mediterranean and being Egyptian, I think, you know, you might have read this Black Athena book that actually the roots of Greco-Roman civilization.
The classical
civilization. There is this book that the roots are in Egypt. And, you know, the love story between Cleopatra and Mark Antony. There's always this marriage between Egypt
and the classical Mediterranean.
And the classical Mediterranean with African roots to that. So we've been quite, if you wish, the link between Africa and Europe.
And this is before the Arabs. Does that give you a sense of responsibility towards your role as a historian and an ambassador as well?
I'm finding here a lot of people studying history and doing research on things that interest me very much. It allows me to continue what I did with my PhD, is to work with pleasure.
to enjoy
what I am doing. Speaking for myself, I think that it is my role to strengthen this friendship between my country and the country to which I am posted.
And the media is very useful.
And the media is very useful to that. And as I told you, if I feel that I represent the Egyptian nation and not just the official side of it, then you've got to speak not just to the official side of the country to which you are posted, but to the civil society. My particular sense is that I need all the island to be my friends, the friends of Egypt in that sense.
Mużika Eġizzjana li tindaq fil-pawżiet bejn l-intervista ta' Dr. Magda Baraka ġew moħuda minn dawk li kienu popolari ħafna f'Misraħ Taħrir f'Jannar tal-2011 u anki aktar riċenti. Huma għalhekk għanijiet li ifakru fl-uforja li kien hemm f'dawk it-toroq meta l-Eġizzjani għamlu r-rivoluzzjoni paċifika. You also feel you are close to the media because you experienced some of it as well, perhaps?
In the very distant past, I have to tell you that what is encouraging me is also the friendliness of the Maltese people to face the media. Speaking of certain countries' diplomatic wariness of facing the media, it might be media shyness.
You had some experience yourself on television, I guess.
Yes, many times, but not in my official capacity. It was in a cultural capacity when I was very young as a poet.
You write poetry as well?
Yes.
Any particular inspiration? Because this is as well a place where we love poetry.
Do they write in English as well?
Yes, and they are being translated also in Arabic, for example. And we have some Arabic poets that have been translated into Maltese. Oh. So we're not that cut off from Arabic inspiration in the Mediterranean.
What I have written is in Arabic. Let's see if that could be translated or would it be of interest.
يا بلادي يا بلادي انا بحبك يا بلادي يا بلادي يا بلادي انا بحبك يا بلادي
يا بلادي يا بلادي انا بحبك يا بلادي يا بلادي يا بلادي انا بحبك
Bil-qala u il-moqdif, illum f'din l-edizzjoni straordinarja l-ambasċatriċi tal-Eġittu, Dr. Magda Baraka, qed tirrakkuntalna dak li hija ħasset għadda minnu l-Eġittu mill-2011 sal-lum u fejn jixtiequ li jmorru. Komplu sibgħu bil-qala u il-moqdif. Let's move on to a subject which obviously is at the moment at the height of all the newscasts of the world. And I am talking about the so-called spring revolutions in the Arabic world. Nearest to us, they started in Tunisia. Egypt has already a 2-year history, 2.5 years almost of history of these revolutions. It was January 2011, am I right?
Yes, 25 January, the first wave broke out.
Would you say 2.5 years is very short? But you can look back, understand it more. Do you think it was the result of divisions like secularism and religion, perhaps progress and people who prefer tradition? Do you think these divisions within the country erupted into such revolutions?
It depends on which wave you're talking about. In January 2011, it was not between Egyptians themselves. It was a refusal of the handing over of the rule from our president, who was 83 at that point,
Mubarak,
with very strong indications that not only did he want to go on with the continuation of 30 years of rule, which was too long.
Maybe pass it to his family.
And then pass it on to his son. So Egyptians revolted against that. And in this revolt, there was no division between secular and religious-oriented people. The motto of the revolution, the motto of the people who took to the streets was...
Tahrir Square has become
Tahrir
famous.
Tahrir Square, yes.
Were you in those streets in those days?
There were 18 days and I was on the streets on six of those 18 days, yes.
So you have a patriotic memory as well. No?
Yes, they were lovely memories because of the peacefulness of it. I want to emphasize how peaceful every round was. Even before 2011, when Gamal Abdel Nasser sent away the king. That was a coup, by the way. People had not taken to the streets, but people welcomed it because the king had become very unpopular by that time. He had started off by being extremely popular, but had become very unpopular. But anyway, it ended with him on his yacht going to Italy to live in Italy. There was not one drop of blood.
Peaceful transition.
It was a peaceful transition. And then when we said enough to Mubarak, it was a peaceful transition. And to go back to this memory of the 6 days of the 18 that I had spent on the streets, they were very euphoric. It was January. The weather was wonderful. You had the breeze as if the angels were hovering over you. People were happy on the streets, finding this solidarity among themselves, yes. Everyone being nice to everyone else.
The feeling of nationalism.
Egyptian flags were waving in Tahrir. And very, very nice. I was taking pictures of the slogans with my mobile. Much of that was very humorous. You'd read the slogans and laugh. There was a sense of well-being and euphoria about it.
And idealism as well.
And idealism. The motto at that time, to go back to the motto was freedom, social justice, human dignity.
Do you think those values in the past had been restricted? People suffered.
What people had felt was that there was no social justice because, you know, when Gamal Abdel Nasser came in 1952, he came with the idea of narrowing the gaps between the classes that had widened immensely. By the time we were in 2011, some people would tell you that they had become even wider, in a sense, between the poor and the rich. There was crony capitalism that the closer you got to power, to the son who was being prepared, that he had a group of businessmen around him who controlled most of the economy and so on. The Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, were the second stratum in the economy. The ones.
But it was illegal at that time.
It's a very difficult situation. It's very ambivalent because they were both legally banned. They were called Al-Mahzura, the band. But they were allowed to operate, which was a very schizophrenic situation.
Yes. A political compromise,
yes,
perhaps.
In fact, they had deals with the government. They were allowed to participate in the 2005 elections, where they were allowed to have 88 seats in parliament, 20% of the parliament. So they were the banned group that were in parliament and that had their political party meetings. They were not a party, they were a political group.
Movement, yeah.
They hadn't evolved into a party yet, but they were a political movement and they made in Ramadan, the month of fasting, they invited everyone in Egypt. They had iftars of 1,500, inviting who is who in Egypt with the government allowing that to happen.
So they were a popular movement in a way as well.
President Mubarak had played was, you don't have fully free elections because what President Mubarak had done was ensure, because our constitution had it, that you couldn't change anything except with a two-thirds majority in parliament. So first he ensured that he got the two-thirds majority in parliament. By alliances, by gerrymandering, okay. Then you can play with the rest. This was the formula, and he allowed the Muslim Brotherhood to play with that. And
it's
the game,
a homemade democracy.
It's a homemade democracy, and you wouldn't know whether, you know, sometimes true campaigns and people losing and so on, but within the margin that he allowed.
Never touching his power base.
Never touching his power base. That was the case. But the game that Mubarak played was, I don't touch the social freedoms of people. You don't touch my political prevalence. And then the game he played was giving the Ikhwan this margin of participation and telling the Egyptian people, you know, if they come, they're going to jeopardize your social freedom. Now, that backfired because with break-off of this first wave of the revolution in 2011, the Ikhwan could say that we've been prosecuted, you know, every once in a while our leadership would go to prison, whereas they had been the only political power allowed to play the game.
Who was behind the 2011 January revolution?
It is the Egyptian youth, and it's the Egyptian social media. This is amazing thing. The thing that happened in Tunisia was replicated in Egypt. Sometimes people say, why haven't we revolted against Mubarak before 2011? And a lot of the people will tell you, because we didn't have internet.
Social media made it possible.
Social media made it possible for political organizations to take place, for an accumulation to take place. Actually, there had been steps from 2000 onwards, slowly. People were congregating through the internet over Iraq because there was the invasion.
The reaction.
And then in 2007 or 2008, the youth also were solidary with workers' movement in Mahal al-Kubra. This is interesting because this is a replica of what happened in 1947 in Egypt as well, where students and workers got together. There had been an Egyptian youth who died. The youngsters were not convinced of the official reasons given. That was a scandal because police said that he died because he swallowed narcotics, which got stuck in his throat. Pictures that had been taken of his body, Khaled Said, his name is Khaled Said, pictures that were taken of his body showed that he had been very badly beaten. We are a very peaceful people, as I keep telling you. So, you know, the national consciousness was very much against it. The thing on the 25th of January 2011 was an internet call for demonstration in the memory of Khaled Said against police actions in this regard. That we don't want to see the police abuse of Egyptian citizens and then cook up a story about how he died. This demonstration on the 25th of January was designed to ask for the removal of the Minister of Interior. They were very surprised to find that it caught fire. Egyptians flocked to the streets. So the level of demands rose and rose and rose. And people didn't leave Tahrir Square until the 11th of February, when Mubarak agreed to leave. So what had started as a demonstration against police on the 25th of January, the police day is supposed to be a celebration of the police, but they decided to demonstrate on that day to tell the police, we are unhappy. They were surprised, again, because of the internet. I mean, I remember because I was in charge on the foreign ministry of Distinguished Guest Lecture Series, and I invited some of the youth leaders who made the calls on the internet and who participated.
They were all the media, the international
media.
Yes,
and I invited to the foreign ministry, and one of them was so emotional. He said, we thought we'd get 7,000 participants or something. And when I came to Tahrir and found there was about 40,000, I was shocked and I was in tears. And I started crying out, saying, anybody who will say that Egyptian people are obedient and submissive doesn't understand anything, you know, and he was saying this to himself. And then the numbers started increasing, 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 and they wouldn't go home.
Grew into millions.
Grew into millions.
It seems that the ideal objective of all this movement in 2011 was to go towards democracy. But democracy itself was quite a new experience for Egypt, like for any other countries who experienced similar revolutions. Would you say that the country was not, and maybe is not yet ready for democracy as we understand it in the West, to put it that way? Because Egypt, for a very long time, had been either a colony or under some protection or monarchy, dictatorship.
No, I'll tell you why. Egypt has had this intermittent experience with democracy. We've had a parliament since 1866. We're very proud of that.
Which is very old.
Yes. And we have a modern style constitution since 1923, democratic elections under the monarchy, choosing the prime minister as of 1924. I would say that there were setbacks in this democratic procedure, but not any different, I would say, from Europe. Because even in Europe, remember, you had Nazism.
And monarchies are still present.
You had Germany, you had Italy, you had Greece. You had Portugal all through the 20th century. So you had this in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 60s in Greece, in the 70s in Portugal.
In Spain. You know,
in Spain, yes, you're right. So even the European experience had these ups and downs. And this is what we had in Egypt. So as I described, that even with Mubarak, you had this margin where, but he wanted to keep control.
It's and a compromise type of democracy.
It's a compromise type of democracy. And even before 1952, there were problems with this democracy. There were elections, but the king had the right to dissolve parliament or ask for a new government. And he did that several times. But we have even before Nasser had what Farid Zakaria would call a liberal democracy, in the sense that the Egyptian elite, some of the parties, you know, we had this very, very popular party that was anti-British called the Wafd Party, which was destined to win any free elections. The other minority parties were very upset that they knew if they entered into competition with this anti-colonial party, they would lose all the way. So they contended that the Wafd was populist and that they were for democracy as long as they won the elections. You have, even in democracy, those two versions where you have the elite wanting to rule and being against the popular masses, or what we had later on with the Muslim Brotherhood, which was again a fallacy, saying that the majority had the right to suppress the minority. If you were in the minority, I could decide whatever you could do.
It stops being a democracy.
You have those two subversions of democracy in both cases. We've had problems with our democracy, but with this experience going on one way or another with their problems.
Mużika Eġizzjana li tindaq fil-pawżiet bejn l-intervista ta' Dr. Magda Baraka ġew moħuda minn dawk li kienu popolari ħafna f'Misraħ Taħrir f'Jannar tal-2011 u anki aktar riċenti. Huma għalhekk għanijiet
li ifakru fl-uforja li kien hemm f'dawk it-toroq meta l-Eġizzjani għamlu r-rivoluzzjoni paċifika tagħhom. Bil-qala u il-moqdif, il-lum f'din l-edizzjoni straordinarja l-ambasċatriċi tal-Eġittu, Dr. Magda Baraka, qed tirrakkuntalna dak li hija ħasset għadda minnu l-Eġittu mill-2011 sal-lum u fejn jixtiequ li morru. Komplu sibgħu bil-qala u il-moqdif. Do you think the country is now ready? Does the majority understand how to play the game of democracy fully? Democracy itself is not perfect, but...
I think, you know, I don't want to get into too sophisticated an argument, but I would tell you that I think we are in Egypt, maybe in the lead, in this review of democracy. The world has been reviewing democracy as of 2011. Remember the Occupy Wall Street movement, which had spread to a number of countries in Asia, in Europe, and people staying on Sun Square in Spain.
Yes, the G8, the protests.
The G8 protests. And what I think is happening is that even democracy is not an absolute idea. Democracy is a historical idea, and it's trying to adapt itself, reinvent itself. And in this attempt to reinvent itself, I remember I told you that I was in Paris. I was in Paris from 92 to 96. As early as that time, I was following internal French politics, and there was talk of the crisis of parties. Could we think of something other than parties? What we are witnessing in the whole world is a return to more direct forms of popular expression. In some way, representative democracy is in crisis. And I would say that part of this popular movement, I don't know where is it going, how is it going to evolve, this weakness of the party system, inadequacy of representative or democracy or party system, and the tendency towards more direct forms of expression. Mm. There is a malaise with it. You know, Time magazine described Egyptians as the best demonstrators and the worst Democrats. I disagree with them. I disagree with them. That it's not just Egypt, it's the world.
So you think the Egyptian nation has been caught in what seems to be a crisis of parties.
Yes.
Before the parties were properly formed and functioned.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Would you say that the Brotherhood now finds itself being a party, having had its president, now even its president removed? Do you think one could compare it to some organization that should have never become a political party, a movement? I will exaggerate by putting an example. If in Italy the mafia forms a party, I am exaggerating, I'm not accusing Brotherhood.
But a lot of Egyptians have made this similitude that you're bringing up.
Okay, so if that becomes a party, a political party, and contests democratic elections, would it be dangerous to have it in power? Would you equate this situation with Egypt?
Absolutely. You know, we're in this soul-searching moment where you have a very old movement. It is political, and if you ban it, it stays. As I told you, it was called the band.
It will become worse. It will become worse.
No, I don't know if it will
if
become...
If you ban it,
I don't know.
Because it will go underground again.
I personally think that they have an underground level
network.
Anyway. So
yeah.
Whether you ban them or you don't, okay, they will play underground because they have had always, you know, like an iceberg, over the top and under the water. When they were not allowed to form a political party before 2011, and then they did. And when they did, they didn't dissolve the Muslim Brotherhood and only keep the party. They kept the Brotherhood, and the Brotherhood kept giving orders to the party. So which of them was the political part?
And so the Brotherhood is stronger than the party.
The Brotherhood is stronger than the party, and they kept this underground, secretive way. This is where your mafia thing comes in.
So you would say that Morsi was the victim of his own Brotherhood.
Yes.
And couldn't deliver democratically the Egyptians were expecting.
Yes, he was seen as the number six man in the chain of the Brotherhood, taking
the
orders from the Brotherhood, which was very busy Brotherhoodizing all the posts.
Islamizing.
Not really Islamizing.
Yeah, but this
not
is a
yet.
Question. How strong is religion in Egypt vis-a-vis secularization? I think you still have to work hard in Egypt, which has happened in Europe as well. In Malta, we're still getting out of it very recently.
Yes.
Where people seem to be, I wouldn't use the word fanatic or obsessed, but where religion comes before anything society offers.
This is the case in Egypt. People are very religious, particularly in Upper Egypt. They are even more and more conservative, which makes them closer to the stricter interpretations of religion. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood, in my opinion, played this card to mobilize. You know, we are having, as I told you, this soul-searching question. Do you allow them to continue or to ban them, in which case they would be more dangerous? A lot of the people who don't want them playing party politics say parties vie for power. You can allow them as a religious movement, like people preaching in society, but not
like
like a church, but not people who are vying for power, because then no matter how much they speak about equality before the law, it will not be in practice. At the end of the day, it will not be real, real equality between Christians and Muslims, between men and women, and so on and so forth. To be fair on the Muslim Brotherhood, if they were with us today, they will disagree. What they say is that they hadn't done any Islamization in 1 year. My answer, to be frank and objective, is what they had done was the Brotherhoodization, and that actually the alliances they made with the Jama'a Islamiyya, with the jihadi Salafists, with the terrorists in the Sinai. So they hadn't banned alcohol. They did exactly what Mubarak did, but they had grown their religious beards. But the feeling was in Egypt, with two steps that they had taken with educational curricula, with the education school curricula, taking out one of the feminist leaders from the curriculum. And the other step was put a minister of culture who cut down on opera and foreign troops.
Strictly Islamic.
That this was alien. So people started really worrying and saying that, you know, since we are talking about French, there was a grignotage, that it was munching at this gradually, that it was coming, that this is why we wanted them removed.
You're biting off the liberties.
Exactly. Biting off slowly, so that after 1 year, you had governors and ministers who were Muslim Brotherhood, who were going to be in control of the next electoral process.
Which would be too late then.
And then everyone now is saying if we had allowed them for one more year, that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Emmek inħallu l-Dr. Magda Barra Kala, ambasciatrici għall-Eġittu f'Malta, b'dik l-laqatana simpatika li jina naħseb bħali sibtuha interessanti ferm. Barra li tkellmet fuq l-Eġittu, fuq pajjiża, semmitu wkoll dibattitu, diskussjoni interessanti li hija qabdet anke minn Franza meta kienet qiegħda servi hemmhekk bħala ambasciatriċi li fil-fatt ġurnal akademiku Esprit u mwaqqaf mill-1932 biex iċerret ideat li jirriflettu l-istorja u l-politika tal-pajjiżi fid-dinja u l-oqsma soċjali akademiċi li jduru magħha, iddedikat in-numru ta' Awwissu Settembru bit-titlu A kwa serv le parti politik għal xiex iservu il-parti politici. Ma Dr. Giovanni Bonello niltaqgħu l-ġimgħa d-dieħla meta nissuktaw nitkellmu dwar karattri mis-seklu 16. Sakemm nerġa' niltaqgħu minn naħa tiegħi ċar xwieb
يا بلادي انا بحبك يا بلادي
قولوا لامي ما تزعليش وحياتي عندك ما تعيطيش قولوا لامي ما تزعليش وحياتي عندك ما تعيطيش قولوا لها معلش يا امي أموت وبلدنا تعيش أمانة بصوري ديها وتسلموا لي على بلادي
يا بلادي يا بلادي أنا بحبك يا بلادي يا بلادي يا بلادي أنا بحبك يا بلادي يا بلادي
Yeah.